Is it something I said, you think? And I haven't said anything yet. But I first want to say what a great pleasure it is to be in your presence in this beautiful space, in this historic town that Liz and I have enjoyed over the weekend. And my wife is sitting in the rows back there with Darian. Hi, Liz. And I want to thank Darian Smith particularly. She's the cause for my being here and first invited me and arranged for the weekend. And you've all been most hospitable, and I've Liz and I very much enjoyed the weekend with you, and it's delightful to be with you. And I want to thank Howard for sharing this free pulpit, to be sure, and for his lovely prayer this morning, and of course the music. As your moderator, I'm privileged to serve over 1,000 congregations in our association, and I bring greetings from all of them. Like you, they are in covenant, promising one to another their mutual trust and support. And I also bring greetings from the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Beaufort, South Carolina, my home congregation, quite different from this congregation. Mine is a young congregation, 15 years old. Yours, a congregation that is 378 years old. You have a long line of distinguished ministers, including the first president of the Unitarian Universalist Association, Dana Greeley. My congregation has had only one minister in its history. We're quite different, Beaufort and Concord, in size, in geography, in history, in architecture, in membership, and in accent. But we are identical in our shared values. That's the wonderful piece of our covenant one with the other, promising our mutual trust and support. This congregation was gathered in 1636 in a party to the Cambridge platform of 1648 that set out the congregational polity that is so vital to Unitarian Universalism to this day. My congregation was gathered in 1999 in a party to the Orlando platform of 2010 that expressed a hope that we will fulfill the promise of the Cambridge platform that all of our congregations could walk together in love and support of one another. The Cambridge platform was a guide on how we conduct ourselves within congregational polity or governance, and it had two major themes or directives: that each congregation makes its own decisions and calls its own leadership, the free church, and that congregations cooperate with and be accountable one to another. The Orlando platform opined that we are really good at doing the former, but we need to do better at the latter. So let me tell you a little bit about my journey from Beaufort to Boston. When Liz and I were invited 15 years ago to join with others to organize an emerging Unitarian Universalist congregation, we were drawn to our theology of the inherent worth and dignity of every person and the interconnected web of all existence, the former for what it said about the acceptance of all people, and the latter for what it said about our independence with all people and our commitment to be good stewards of all the earth. We had been seekers for a very long time and surprised that we had not found Unitarian Universalism until we moved to a small southern town. We both served in a number of roles in our emerging congregation, and I was soon asked to be our congregation's president. And in those days, our nominating process was simply a confirmation that you could fog a mirror. Which I could barely do at that time, but that's a sermon for another time. Not knowing much about Unitarian Universalism beyond the principles and the sources, and soon after being president of that congregation, Liz and I attended our first General Assembly, and it was there that I began to connect to the rich history and heritage of our faith. And it was there that I knew we had found our intellectual and spiritual home after our decades-long search for a liberal and liberating faith community. GA was quickly followed by a week at the Mountain School for Congregational Leadership at Highlands, North Carolina. That's where I learned to take a nap, where we became more deeply immersed in the Unitarian Universalist history, theology, and polity. I was stunned to learn that I'd been a Unitarian Universalist since the age of 11, had lived all over the United States and Asia, but had never met a Unitarian, a Universalist, or a Unitarian Universalist. Not one. Not ever. And thus began my evolution as a UU humanist evangelist. You'll have to work with that. If I, an engaged progressive, had never come in contact with Unitarian Universalism over a course of 5 decades, there must be hundreds of thousands of people like Liz and I who share the values of Unitarian Universalism and are seeking a liberal religious community. They just don't know we're here. We now know from Pew Research that there are about 750,000 adults who identify as Unitarian Universalist. They can spit out all 10 syllables of that without stumbling. When you add spiritual but not religious and other generally liberal people, that's a pool of about 16 million adults whose values closely align with ours. It would be arrogant to assume that all we come in contact with would choose to join us, but I don't think it's unrealistic to believe that there are many, many people who need our message of love, compassion, and justice, and would freely join us if only we invited them. And I believe that the world needs the values of Unitarian Universalism. More than ever, there's a desire to live lives of meaning, purpose, and justice. And we know that the values expressed by emerging generations are in alignment with the values of Unitarian Universalism. Examining the changes occurring in the broader culture and religious landscape demands that we recognize that we have to expand our efforts to actively engage people outside of our traditional congregational constructs. Specifically, the growth of the number of people, especially younger generations, who have no religious affiliation and no church-going practices require that we provide a clear and differentiating signal of the difference we believe our values can provide to individual lives and the collective culture. That's why I'm excited about the branding initiative that will over time communicate better who we are, what we do, and why it matters. It's become my mantra. Who we are, what we do, and why it matters. How can we communicate that better? Beginning with the Unitarian Universalist Association's webpage, I might add. I believe in the power of our liberal religious values to change lives and to heal the world. It is our congregations who are the primary institutions to create transformation, especially when we understand ourselves as part of a larger movement of purpose and we are focused outward. And it is our congregations that do the work and make the changes this evolving world calls for. We are indeed the religion for our time, but we face choices as we work to attract They are not monolithic in their views, to be sure, but this generation's values map very closely to ours. The unchurched and the increasing number of people who hold multiple religious identities are also exclusionary values. In many parts of the country, congregations are organizing themselves in clusters and affinity groups and becoming more visible in the public square. The Florida Legislative Ministry was born out of a group of congregations first organized as a cluster. I spoke at the Tidewater Cluster in Virginia last weekend, and the Virginia Legislative Ministry was born out of that cluster work. There's much we can do to influence public policy when we gather in large and loud groups and show up. You may remember that over 12,000 Unitarian Universalists from across the nation gathered in Raleigh, North Carolina in February in the Mass Moral March to protest regressive legislation in that state. And in my own state of South Carolina, Unitarian Universalist ministers and lay leaders have organized Truthful Tuesdays. We show up at the legislature most Tuesdays to express our disagreement with some of the regressive legislative policies in the works. So my charge to you is this: examine your long-range plans and satisfy yourself that it acknowledges the rapid demographic and cultural change that is underway. Some say the most dramatic societal change since the Protestant Reformation. Learn what is going on in congregations near you, in the district, in the region, and throughout the association, to see what programs and activities others are engaged in where you can lend your voice or resources. And thanks to Arian for the reference to being fair share. It's important that all of our congregations do so if we're going to make the world a better place. This first parish in Concord, great legacy, that is your historic contribution to our great faith. The independence of free congregations cooperating with and accountable to one another, working together in love. What a great legacy you have to build on. As Rebecca Parker wrote, none of us can save the world. Together, that's another possibility.
Thank you, Jim. It's always fun to share the pulpit with another person, especially when you have no idea what they were going to say, and it actually doesn't trump yours. Any good preacher knows that if you're going to save the day, you can't go first. So here's mine. At the end of our meeting last Saturday night, the Ministerial Fellowship Committee and I said goodbye to the Unitarian Universalist Association headquarters in Boston. In an evening of laughter and tears, we honored those grand old Beacon Hill buildings and thank them for their service to us. For 7 years, I have served as the vice chair of the Ministerial Fellowship Committee. This is the credentialing body of the denomination, among other things, and that work has required me on occasion to live for days on end at the UUA. I have slept in the UUA guest house many times. I have debated and discussed denominational work in various rooms at 25 Beacon Street over the years. And I have developed a love-hate relationship with buildings that were built for a different age, an age with few technological advances, no awareness of accessibility, and a decidedly white upper-class mindset. But when I stood up to speak at the farewell dinner last Saturday evening, I didn't talk about the time that I had spent working in those buildings. I talked about the time that I had spent there with middle schoolers. I talked about seeing the UUA through eighth grade eyes. One of the stories that we adult leaders used to tell the middle schoolers on their Boston Heritage trip was that the fourth floor of the guest house was haunted. Steam heat coming on in the middle of the night, setting pipes clanking, only reinforced our story. Given the chance teenagers will explore, we know this, by suggesting that a trip to the fourth floor would result in one or more of them disappearing, horror film style, the inevitable playful sneaking around became all that much more pleasurable. The stern portraits of long-dead Universalist superintendents lining the halls of the guest house only helped enlarge the myth that it was haunted. All these kids had read Harry Potter. They knew that people in portraits could move around as they pleased. At the dinner, I also told about one trip in which the other adults and I were surprised when a room of four girls and a room of four boys settled down very quickly the night that we arrived there, a little too quickly, in fact. While their classmates were hanging out in the guest house's living room or timidly trying to explore that fourth floor, these two adjacent rooms were very, very quiet. It was only the next morning that we discovered that there is a secret door between the closets of these two rooms, allowing hushed traffic to move back and forth between the boys and the girls. The adults all laughed at this discovery. We knew that nothing would have happened with eight teenagers in close proximity on their first night in Boston. But just to be safe, the next night, we moved the boys to a different room. So when we raised a glass to 25 Beacon Street last Saturday night, we did so with stories of people that we had met there, work that we had done there, and a devotion for our faith that we had shared there. We remembered with fondness the men and women who had worked before us. We spoke of the need to adapt to a changing religious world, and we toasted a place that had served us so very well. And we were also, in the midst of that, very aware that the UUA was not its buildings. We were aware that the heart of our denomination can be alive and well in another place. We were aware that it is the people that the UUA serves that are important, not the bricks and mortar that make up its building. For over a century, it has only been 20 short miles between the UUA headquarters at 25 Beacon Street in Boston and 20 Lexington Road in Concord, our current address. And when the UUA moves to 24 Farnsworth Street in Boston's Innovation District, the distance will, in fact, be slightly shorter. But how far has it really been between the UUA and First Parish? The answer to that question depends on who you ask and when. Certainly in Puritan times, the trip from Concord to Boston was not made easily or often. Yet First Parish in Concord was one of the congregations that gathered in 1648 in Cambridge to work out a system of congregational polity that governs all of our UU churches to this day. And in 1764, during the Great Awakening, First Parish was far enough from its sister churches to fire its minister, Reverend Daniel Bliss, for his overly emotional spiritual views. His portrait is in the parish hall. Check it out. We know that First Parish in Concord was close enough for British soldiers to have marched here from Boston on April 19, 1775, and we know that in Ralph Waldo Emerson's era, the trip to Boston could be made and back in one day, weather permitting. After the Civil War, First Parish was served by Reverend Grindell Reynolds, also president of the American Unitarian Association, bringing the church closer to the AUA headquarters in Boston. During most of the 20th century, a humanist-theist debate within the congregation affected the distance between the denominational headquarters and this very church. The congregation first called Dr. Johannes Auer, a humanist, in 1920, and then Edward Daniels, a theist, in 1931. By 1957, it was back to having a humanist minister in Arthur Jellis, only to have him succeeded by Dr. Dana Greeley, another theist, in 1970. Not surprisingly, the congregation continues in its trend in calling Gary Smith more humanist and Jenny Rankin more theist. Fascinating how congregations repeat themselves. One thing remains true. The distance between First Parish in Concord and the UUA is directly related to the affection between its leaders. In his remembrance of First Parish, published in 1985 in The Meeting House on the Green, Eric Parkman Smith recalls, "Dr. Greeley's succession to the pulpit had a substantial effect upon the size of the congregation, coming to Concord already well-known and much admired because of his vigorous administration as the first president of the Unitarian Universalist Association, and with his sympathy toward the theistic viewpoint, he was a natural rallying point for all who, with an interest to Unitarian Universalism, were anxious to return to the congregation and did so." Dr. Dana Greeley's service to First Parish ended with his death in 1986, almost 30 years ago. And what has happened in those 30 years to the distance between First Parish and the UUA? Has the distance gotten longer or shorter? And more importantly, what do we want to do about it? Each time I would lead a group of teenagers through the UUA headquarters in Boston, I would make a point of telling them that the building belonged to them. "This is your building," I would say. "You own it because you are part of a congregation that is part of the Unitarian Universalist Association of Congregations." Of course, their eyes would light up as they considered ransacking the place for anything valuable or fun. But I would continue saying, "This building is your spiritual home. It is the place that offers the best hope of spreading your values in the world." When we would tour the UUA chapel and see the portraits of our ancestors, these teenagers would start to get it. When we would visit the UUA youth office, they would start to get it. When I would let them look at Civil War era Unitarian and Universalist newspapers, they would start to get it. When we stood reverently before the memorial to UUs who lost their lives in the fight for civil rights in the 1960s, they would start to get it. By the end of the tour, they would all want to buy something from the UUA bookstore and have their pictures taken on the front steps. By the end of the tour, they had gotten it. Nothing about getting it needs to change when the UUA moves to 24 Farnsworth Street. It is up to us to visit our new denominational headquarters with the same spirit of hope, determination, enthusiasm, and reverence as we ever did. The future of our faith is in our hands. It is in our hands. Let us join our new moderator, Jim Key, in building a bright future together. So be it. Amen.